This is a production of Cornell University.
TPSA meeting, March 7th, 2011.
Discussion meeting of the GPSA, March 7th, 2011.
All right, so we're going to get underway. Sorry for the little bit of the delay. We were waiting to see if a quorum of the GPSA would actually form today, and probably due to the weather, we do not have that at the moment, but since there is no voting items on the list, we'll get on the way as is. So due to the slight delay, we're going to kind of skip some of the welcome and introductions. I am Preston Mansfield, the president of the GPSA, and in front are the other executives, Tom Belzerski, the vice president of operations, and Jen Schwartz, the executive vice president. Let's see if the microphone's actually working today. Is this on? No.
Try turning it on.
Let's try actually turning it on. How about now? There, much better. All right. So today we have kind of a packed agenda, and so we actually are probably going to shift one item around. We're going to actually get the update on the mental health initiatives first, just kind of move that up on the agenda so they can be on their way. And so they have a presentation prepared, and so I'll call Gilbert Delgado and the rest up to give the presentation. You can stay on that any microphone if you would like to. All right, thank you. There we go.
Thank you for having us back. My name is Tim Marshall. I'm director of the Mental Health Initiatives and Health Services. Gilbert Delgado and I are going to share this presentation. I'm actually just going to tee this up a little bit. As you're aware, we're talking about the needs restriction study, which is being conducted by Cornell in concert with the City of Ithaca. And I want to put the whole issue of needs restriction into a broader context of suicide prevention efforts and mental health efforts at Cornell. But can I have the next slide, please? So this is maybe a little bit difficult to see, but this is the broad framework that we use at Cornell as we think about addressing the needs of mental health. And if you start at the top, I'm just going to kind of walk you around this. The broad context at the top is the foster a healthy educational environment, and then some of you aware President Sport called upon the faculty to examine the academic environment this year, and then there's a number of initiatives which are underway to look at that, but we're also concerned about the social environment as part of the educational living environment. The next box you see there is promoting life skills and resilience. We're concerned about how individual students can adapt to the inherent challenges in undergraduate or graduate professional student life. And there are a number of strategies we have in place to support students in that regard. The next one is that increased counseling behavior. We know that counseling services and various forms of student support are beneficial to students, but there are sometimes hesitations on the part of students to seek help, and so we're trying to convey messages that encourage people to seek help. And the next one, there is students that identify people in need of care. An example of this is the efforts that we have to educate students, staff, faculty, teaching assistants about how to recognize and respond to individuals in distress. The purple box down there, about the 7 o'clock, is the one that addresses our integrated medical and mental health services, and mental health services. And moving up the wheel, on the left-hand side, we have an array of crisis management services. And after the 3 student suicides of a year ago, we brought in a group of consultants on suicide prevention to analyze our overall approach to suicide prevention. And what they said was that for the most part around this wheel, we have a number of strategies in place. Some are well developed. There's always work to be done in each of these areas. But what they said was that blue box up in the left upper left side, restricting access to the means of suicide, was the one where we needed to do the most work. That's what led to the means restriction study that Gilbert Delgado was discussing with you now.
Thank you, Kevin. Good afternoon. Before we get started, I wanted to just map out where we are right now in the process. what we've completed and what we still have yet to do. If you look at the schedule for that, you'll see three little blue bars that shows the lab of activity. Today is actually moved, let's say, about a third of the way down the next white line, or white bar. The first part was called site analysis, technical and Cornell literature review. And that was the period of time that we gave the architect to actually review the local site, each individual site, to get a feel for the our culture, our what it means to be, what Looking Bridge means to Cornell and to, and to survey the technical literature regarding meaning extraction, investigation of material, to get an understanding of the subject. They completed that, and then what they are submitting now is the phase design that we completed is called the pre-schematic phase. And what we've asked them to do was develop three different designs for every single bridge. And the reason we did that was to A, not subject to any preconceptions regarding what was the right solution. You'll see nets, you'll see fences, you'll see something in between. And the whole idea of that was to be sure that we had the opportunity to look at the solution of this problem in a good, robust way. Additionally, it also allowed us to put something out for public commentary, so people could see the virtues, the quality, and the attributes of these different ways to solve this problem. So as I go through this presentation, you'll see for each one of the bridges, three different ways to approach this notion of mean restriction. What you'll see today is a really broad brush overview of different solutions. The solutions are posted on the web, and it's at means restriction study, one word, means restriction study .fs.cornell.edu. And there you'll see a video of the architect presenting the actual solution, about an hour and a half presentation. You'll see PDF, the actual solution, for you to study carefully, and you'll have an opportunity to provide comments on what you're seeing. What we're going to do is collect all the comments at the end of the comment period, about 2 weeks. And then we're going to use that survey of public opinion to help inform what's the next step that we need to do. So that means that the architect that we selected for this, when we went about selecting an architect, we decided to not go the route of a civil engineer / security consultant. We went with an architect that had very keen sensitivity to some of the issues that are incumbent in this design process, primarily how to treat these beautiful scenic areas in a thoughtful and artful manner. And Fermanada, led by Eric Durrani, is that perfect. And if you have the opportunity to go to the website, I think you will see a very thoughtful and thought-provoking presentation on how to approach this as an addition. Okay, there we see seven different bridges, of which the city owns some of them, and then we own some of them. They broadly fall into three different types. The first type are the heavy vehicular bridges, and that will be treated in the first part of this presentation. The second family of bridges is the lighter pedestrian scale bridges. They're lighter, they're treated in a different way, so when we go to this, you'll see these included in those families. The third one, in a place unto itself, is the stone arch bridge, that because of the way it's rendered, the architecture of it, the cultural connotations of it, is in itself a unique species. So the next slide. So just briefly going into what were some of the design methods in addition to the site analysis, what you'll see in terms of what informed the design process. You'll see bar systems, you'll see glass wall, and a material that they very interested in is tensile steel mesh, which if you see on the upper left-hand corner, becomes almost transparent at a certain distance. It's a fine gauge wire, stainless steel. If you go up close, of course, you can see it, but at a distance, it starts to dematerialize. So when you look at the nest beams, perhaps, that are more than, say, 5 or 10 feet away from your eyes, likely you won't see anything. Right? We are in the process of negotiating with one of the vendors to install a 4-foot by 6-foot swath that you can actually test the proof of concept. And I encourage you, if you're interested, to go out and take a look at it. So, starting off with the first of the family of bridges, the Nicola Bridge, the Stuart Avenue Bridge, the Catadella Green Court, the next slide. This is its current condition. It's a heavy bridge over a steel arch. Next slide. So, the first approach is a rail, the rail approach. And the architect is opposed to coming up with, let's say, a rigorous, equally spaced bar beam, came up with a scheme where you actually can modulate the distances between the bar, actually model top silhouette of the rail. So what comes out of that type of treatment is something that is somewhat more organic than the word straight rigorous as in the bottom of the slide. And what you will see in each one of these will be a similar treatment in terms of how the design is presented. Each of the designs that will show you the view from the street, which you see here. Next slide. The view from the sidewalk, which you see here. And the view from beneath it. And as you see from beneath it, you can see how it's treated where it's higher on the edges and then it moves in towards the center, also echoing what's happening below with the cord of the steel arch. The second option of the treatment grid is the idea of net on each side of using the stainless steel mesh. Next slide. This is how it looks from the top. No visual impact at all. From the bottom, you'll see something. Next slide. And proposal C is a net that is not attached to the bridge, but actually attached to the board wall. So it's even further down and even more transparent. Next slide. Again, what you see from the top. Next slide. What you see from the bottom. Next slide. Second bridge, similar to the other one, except it's a straight truss down below. Next slide. The current condition. Next slide. Okay, similar treatment with the rail system, although because we have the opportunity to try different explorations, here you see a slightly different treatment where the modeling occurs in different segments. Next slide. That's what it would look from the street. Next slide. That's what it would look from the sidewalk. So as you see, it's something that's laid out, has something of interest going for it inside of just being a straight rail. Next slide. How it presents itself from the bottom of the course. And then the second option for that bridge would be a net system. A little bit different than the one before, because in this particular instance, the bottom truss allows the camouflage the struts that actually support the net. Next slide. You won't see anything from the street. Next slide. Or will you see anything from the sidewalk? Next slide. And then from below, it is the struts are camouflaged and painted the same color as the truss system below it. Of course, the tensile system that this is for would probably be something that you wouldn't see very well at all. Proposal C is more of a straight off mesh, the same system that they have in San Francisco. Next slide. Again, next slide. I mean, by this point, I think it's kind of that's a bit different. Next slide. And then the third, this bridge in some ways is a very difficult one. It is a vehicular bridge, it's heavier. In some ways, it's the way it expresses itself with the two different arches presents some challenges to add something to it. Next slide. The current condition. Next slide. So one possible idea is to form attachment at the top board of the arch. And then pull a mesh system off of it. Next slide. Now, what this allows you to do is to try to reconcile some of the geometries that are currently inherent in the existing condition so that it actually is softened in terms of how it meets the landscape. Next slide. And that's what we would present on the sidewalk. Next slide. That's the way we'll present it from below. Next slide. Then, the idea of doing the net underneath the first avenue bridge. Next slide. No visual impact at all. Next one. Minor impact. Next slide. And then the third view, and sometimes in some instances, the architect could be off. Opportunity of having one of the options be something that is a little bit different than all the other ones. In this particular case, they took the idea of a covered bridge and defined the idea that the bridge is not just a crossing point, but can actually be a destination. Next slide. And using the expression of the roof as something that will reconcile again the geometry of the top floor of the support system with the actual landscape, something that is somewhat sinuous and presents in an area that can actually provide cover during rain or snow. Next slide. That's the way we present it. So here we have something that supports the tensile mesh system. And then up above provide the cover. They're also proposing taking down the handrail so that this is actually a very thought-provoking idea, because what it does, it allows you to look down at the course in a way that you never saw before. So it actually opens up the system in a way that we've not thought of before. On the other hand, there are some people that still are comfortable with being able to walk over the edge of the feet. But that's why we like to come. And then the stone arch gets to be a very special treatment. Next slide. Next slide. And from here, they actually explored the idea of using glass as the only option. They do use that. Next slide. And glass can come in a variety of different types. Low carbon glass is practically transparent. That's the green glass you might be accustomed to. Next slide. That's the way we present itself on the sidewalk. Next slide. Now, one thing about glass is that it has to be immaculate for it to succeed. And, you know, at the top of Rockefeller Center, they have glass system, but they have people with Ouija's and glass, you know, windex bottles all day. I don't think we'll have that, but I think nonetheless, it's an idea that's out there, just to be sure that we cover the breadth of ideas that are possible. Next slide. Net system. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. So you see the variety of different ways to achieve this net. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Okay, so now we come to the last in the family, which is the pedestrian bridges. And in this family of bridges, the architect felt that they could be much more lyrical in their approach. For one thing, the scale is much more intimate. You're closer in. You're also more in the woods, and that in itself informs the design process in some way. Next slide. Next slide. So the first one, and when it first came to me with this idea, I thought the public will never buy this, but I've actually have heard a lot of interest in this particular solution, which is to leave the idea that the rail system has to be below your waist, but what if it's all the way around and was able to actually create space? The idea of perhaps being thrown in the woods. And of course, this is something that needs to be very specially treated. But I think that they have the beginnings of that idea very well articulated. Next slide. So this is what it would look as to approach it. Next slide. And once you're ready. So what's interesting here, and I'd like you to focus on it, is that the bars can actually be modeled in such a way that they're much more organic in how they're rendered, and in some way resonates with some of the branches in the background. So, you know, this is not a new idea. If you look at Art Nouveau in terms of a period in architecture, you see where man-made objects are in some way mimicking the natural environment and in a way that actually resonates with the natural environment. And that's, I think, what we see here. The possibility of doing that, again, to your right of the ghost lady, is the idea of seeing. So this becomes an area of contemplation. Again, the focus of taking out the handrail so you get a full top-to-bottom view for it. Next slide. And then this is the way it renders itself from the outside. I see it's something that has a certain life to it. It's soft as opposed to hard, even though it's made of metal. Right? And then that was the rail treatment. This is a tensile mesh treatment. With the idea that it's a triangulated support system is the most efficient way to structure just about anything. And in this way, they can get with very, very thin and fine support structure in the tensile mesh system. Next slide. And that's the way the future that we present itself. Next slide. Next slide. Almost starts to dematerialize in that photograph. Next slide. And a similar variation, the idea of geometry. Next one. Next one. Next one. So you see, no handrails for love. Next slide. BB Gansage. Next slide. Current condition. Again, the rail system, and the rail system that acknowledges that, in fact, the BBM condition is not symmetrical about the bridge, that on one side you have a waterfall, and then when you don't, and then you can actually create this exterior room that reflects that external condition. Next slide. And you see, where something is modeled almost like a model field in a way, kind of a partial treatment of a rail system. And taking down what I think is by comparison a very clunky building. And here they're proposing a system where there's two pairs of bars, much thinner gauge, in such a way that it actually could be a much lighter touch than what was there before. So even though it's higher up than before, one could actually, I think, make an argument that it is more transparent and more sympathetic. I think this photograph is interesting because if you look at the color rendition of the trees in the background, there's a certain, I think, pictorial sympathy between the bridge and the landscape. What if we move to the tensile system? Next slide. Next slide. And the suspension bridge being the last one, perhaps the most iconic of the pedestrian bridges. Next slide. Current condition. Next slide. So what if we use the tensile system that actually created the canopy of the source? Next slide. That's here. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. This is a rail system where there is a code requirement. You can't have a 5-inch sphere up to about the waist level, as a child will slip between the rail. But up above, you don't have the same requirement. So here's an idea where you carry a much more artful section of the bottom rail system, and it's one that doesn't encumber your ability to climb it. Next slide. And it can actually bend and be modeled in a much more artful approach than just a straight out diagonal maintaining everything straight across. Next slide. Next slide. Steve talked about an end system. Next one. Next one. Next one. Okay. And that pretty much summarizes the middle in terms of the different approaches to different bridges. I know there's a lot to take in, and that's why I encourage you to go to the website to provide the comments for that.
We have about 5 minutes for questions, so Evan, you have the first one.
I wonder if you have a sense of what the sort of basic differences are between things that are more like fences or canopies, and we can't meet their different perspectives or pros and cons. It's obviously there's a very strong basis.
Yeah, the difference is always the functional difference. In one, you can't even get through it, right? The other one, you can get through it, but you can still get hot. So there is a functional difference between the two approaches. We've heard a lot of, we've been doing this presentation now for 4 or 5 hours. And we hear these a lot. One is, well, how about the focus for, playing in competition and that. they do talk about the panel and but it can be also so there are some functional differences about the net gives you fully unencumbered view. What you got today, pretty much what you got, have to look over and down because a 50-foot extension is not something you can easily see, even looking down. You have to go down here and try to see, you draw something, how do you get to it?
Ben?
You mentioned that the comment period is about 2 weeks. When does it end and how long do people have to?
Well, we went to full report sometime last week. We had four presentations on one campus so we do have to at some point move forward and we have a very aggressive May 31st deadline to submit a final design to the city and UNC. So I would say it's about another week. Granted, if something trickles in after that, you know, the way the comments are going to be treated, I just think we're not sure we're going to get a wide spectrum of opinions. I don't think it's going to be totally, cohesion and everything. There will be contradictions. But what it allows us is it allows us to get a temperature read on set, and kind of incorporate that. So even if we begin the next phase of design, if there's something that actually helps inform the process, of course it's going to be.
And one other question, is the university currently committed to doing all bridges or no bridges or some bridges or is there a criteria for evaluating what to do?
That's a different discussion. Our team has been charged with take a look at the 7 bridges and approach them using an architect in the best way that you can. Of course, at some point we'll be looking at, bang for the buck. Just for example, the trolley bridge, I understand. If that's the case, do we really want to spend money? So there'll be some of that occurring, but that is a parallel discussion that will somewhat be informed by this, but it's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We have time for one more question. Yes? With that, let's thank for the presentation. Thank you very much. All right, now moving on into the agenda today, we're actually going to go back to the announcements and reports section of the meeting. And so it will start off with the executive announcements and reports. And so the only thing that I have today, yes, it is. I'll speak closer to it, apparently, is that always check out CornellGPSA.com. It's where information is posted. You can find out information about the officers and the executives. And I believe that's it for time. Tom, do you have any updates? Jen? All right. And then moving on to the committee chairs. I know there's specific updates from specific people, so Nicole is first, if you want to talk about the events committee.
Okay, so I have to put this in here because I want to keep you guys up to date on, this is one of the things kind of coming through in the charter changes that we'll be discussing later this evening, but it's a very minor charter change and a relatively big undertaking otherwise, which is that we want to turn the events committee, which is currently a committee of the GPSA, into an independent, byline-funded student organization, effectively it would still be staffed by the GPSA, but instead you receive funding directly from the student activity, the same way the GPSA provides you the funding from the institution, things like this. So this is actually, in my opinion, really good thing. It gives us access to a lot more money effectively and a little bit more creative freedom. It also means that the event committee is not under under the responsibility of the GPSA directly. The GPSA should really be doing more governing, student government, and not being planning social for graduate students. So effectively what we want to do is transform the event committee into a graduate professional student programming board, which surprisingly enough doesn't really already exist. So in order to do that, there's a couple of things that need to happen, and I would really like to try to recruit you guys to help me get this done. The first thing is I need to register a new student organization, and this is a lot of work on my part, but it does require more members to sort of officially take it on. So if you're at all interested in being involved in the committee in the future, or hopefully the programming board in the future, please let me know. I think you should all have my email, but it's nm868. So if you're at all interested in being involved in these events in the future, please let me know. The second thing is, in order to get guideline funding, we have to get signatures from 10% of graduate students at Cornell. So this is around 630 signatures that we need to get. So I have already started the petition, so I'd really like for you guys to sign it. I'm going to be applying for $2.50 from the student activity for the next year. That would give us effectively a double budget relative to what we've had this year. I think that's a really good thing. And if you guys have enjoyed the events that have been happening so far this year, I think you should support this. So I'm going to pass this around and I'd love for you guys to all sign it and get us well on our way to the 630 votes we need to, signatures we need to get. And then finally, the final funding process, the sort of initial deadline petition application thing is April 25th. So that's when we need to have most of our materials together and actually see a new organization sign for the funding. So again, if anyone wants to help me, I would really like it because I'm also putting together grad ball, and as you saw, we have another event on Thursday, and I also have, my PhD for fun. So I really love any help that you guys can provide. So, do you guys have any questions for me?
Evan.
Very quick question about number three, the amount.
Yes.
This of course, the difficulty with the byline funding is that, we spend the activity fee at $76. If we want to give more money to a particular group, we either need to decrease one somewhere else or we need to increase the fee overall. So the current amount is about $1.50-ish per student. That's sort of rough math in my head. Presumably, we would decrease the GPSA's allocation by that much. Find the dollar somewhere.
That's absolutely my assumption. We would actually be decreasing the funding that comes specifically to the GPSA. And I should say the event committee is by far the biggest expense of the GPSA currently. And we have a budget of 7,000 this year, which is just whatever budget. But effectively, that would be erased from the GPSA loan budget.
Be able to directly go up, and then the next year's GPSA
committee can decide if they deserve an extra dollar from the next year's GPSA. So that's
sort of the idea of my goal to apply for that.
Any other questions for the poll? Yeah.
Is there a way to
fill the request
and
you can
change additional forms you
want to do? Yes, and I would definitely ask you to. Actually, if you wanted to, you can grab a couple off the back. I only need 15 of those, but our goal also is, we'll be at the barn, we'll be at other GPSA events trying to get as many signatures as possible. But yeah, this is just sort of the rough start of the process that made it obvious today. Upload copies? Yes, I can do that. I can put a link, I can stick the PDF on the cornellgpsa.com. I'll put a posting there, and I'll put a little bit of a blurb. So you can tell, you can provide information to everyone. But yeah, we actually do have to have hard copies of the signatures. And actually, can we have them bring them into the assembly office?
Mm-hmm.
If they're completed forms. So yeah, we do have them bring them into the assembly office. So you have them. Thank you, guys.
Nicole, so assuming the 250 goes through, that would be
$50,000.
I would imagine it would be a sizable increase in your budget.
It would double it.
Double.
It would be a huge increase.
Okay. Would that be more events?
Yeah, that would be, yeah, it would hopefully be more events, assuming there's also more people to do the ledger. But yeah, that would be great.
Thanks.
All right, and with that, we have to move on. Any updates? Bobby has the next one.
So I wanted to bring to everyone's attention that a portion of the activity that we're talking about tonight can be allocated out to the field through a request to the finance currently understand that we have less than half the building across the field listed requesting this funding. This funding can be used for social events, speakers, really for any type of activity that that field so desires. So what I'd like to try to do is start encouraging this audience to identify themselves if they haven't already, as well as encourage their friends or colleagues in other fields to apply for this funding. The first step is for us to be able to identify are and represent each various field. So tonight, as we break out our discussion group, I have provided a list of all the fields, the president has copied them, and we encourage each of you to look loosely to grab a copy of that, look through it, to make sure that under your field there is a group listed. If not, that you are going to have to provide the name of the group and the contact with the group for the GPSA president.
Any questions for Bobby at all? Seeing none, we'll move on into committee updates. Do you have any time?
All I can say right now is that the appropriations committee has basically completed. We basically completed our responsibility to review and discuss the agreement for the GSA and the finance committee guidelines. I'm going to be submitting a resolution in the very, very near future for the GPSA to review and go to approve the changes, and I hope to be in communication and part of the discussion.
Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on. Marquis, anything from the Student Advocacy Committee? Questions or comments from Marquis? Seeing none, the Communications Committee have an update, Jen.
The Communications Committee will be having a meeting on Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock in the field.
That's it. Jen, yeah, she wanted to get
some more t-shirts so they didn't get their time. Oh, okay. And we have more GPSA t-shirts from last year. So if you want to get one.
Any questions or comments for Jen? Seeing none, we'll move on into the ad hoc committee. So does the ad hoc environmental committee have any updates? Billy?
We have our last meeting.
with any questions or comments for Billy? Seeing none, the Ad Hoc Survey Committee, Evan, do you have an update?
Everybody should receive an email from the wonderful Chris Button. Please feel free to take a look at said document and send any member of the committee who assists with that email. You'll be done. Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
And if you get, you happen to get the survey when it comes out personally, please take it. 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes, something like that.
Tell your friends.
All right, moving on, the Ad Hoc Mental Health Committee.
We're meeting tomorrow at 5:30 and 325 Caldwell to discuss revisions to the Graduate Student Life website, that it has more links and more items posted regarding wellness checkpoints.
Any questions or comments? Seeing none, anything to add to the Ad Hoc Emergency Fund Committee, then?
I could still use some extra help, particularly if anybody in the business school or the law school, trying to identify what existing emergency funds are available to professional and graduate students, and the committee is in the process of scheduling a first meeting.
Any questions or comments? All right, seeing none, we'll move on. If there's any of the liaisons to any of the other assemblies that would like to give an update, now would be the time. Seeing none, does the trustee have an update?
Well, I have a 15-minute update just to get out of their questions. And so they have a new full membership, as well as a president, executive president, and what the most leadership later on this year.
Yes, Evan.
Okay. I was just going to ask on the MA, there was talk, I remember quite a while ago, when Mary Aton used to attend our meeting, of changing the SAFC guidelines. Anything ever come of that?
Nothing has been going on this year. There was a lot of campaigning for the election about changing SAFC guidelines coming next year. So maybe something going on in this year by people who are campaigning. Good education for students in age. I think it's worth it, continuing globalizing.
Any brief questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll actually move into the business items of the day. We switched one to earlier where we had the presentation on the means restriction. The next one you'll notice is the discussion on Resolution 6, which is discussing the charter changes that have been an ongoing discussion this entire year, and Tom will take us through it. So, Tom.
All right. I'm going to refer to the slides up here, and first thing is these are the current sponsors of Resolution 6. Include the number of people in the room. If you are on this list and you're present, would you raise your hand? So, as you see people with their hands up, keep them up, please. As we go into our discussion section, feel free to ask them questions. And if you want to be on this resolution, and I'm sure I've omitted you, I'm sorry, but I can add you before the next one. Next slide, please. So, this is the next slide. I wanted to just show you this charter review. It should be. Here now. This is the calendar that we've been operating on since the beginning of the year, and we're currently in March 7th discussion meeting, and we're to discuss the resolution by the voting members with the field representatives. So since the voting members have been privy to about a 35 or 40 minute presentation 2 weeks ago, my hope was in the discussion sections or breakout groups, that in addition to going through the lists that we have for the field organizations, you would also speak with them about some of the issues that were raised the last time. So what I want to do now is only highlight a mere few of the ones that were discussed, as I say, in depth at the business meeting. And let's see, maybe go to the next slide there. This is the same presentation I presented 2 weeks ago, and ironically, this raises the first point about what we want to change, and that's related to, in right now, Article 7 of the Charter, but it would become Item 4 of the bylaws. And I'm going to leave this slide up here, hopefully during the meeting even. Because broadly we want to talk about how the meetings are structured. There's been hints about this at past meetings and past discussions, but it has never really been ironed out until today. So the key I want you to talk about today in your groups is, one, do you think that the GPSA should meet in a more, in a less structured way? That is to say, currently we have a very strict ruling that we shall have meetings that alternate between business and discussion. And what this has meant in practice has meant is that those people, the green placards or the voting members, need to attend all the meetings, especially they need to attend the business meetings where they then, for the most part, do the voting and business of the body. And they also then attend these meetings, and there's been a kind of discussion now that's been happening between the persons without the green placards about everything we just did 2 weeks ago. And as I said, this presentation is a case in point. So rather than this having been the second time I would have presented this, in like a new meeting format, we would have all of you at each meeting. And so business would be done more efficiently in that there would be opportunity to cover more and you have less need to repeat. So what this would mean practically for everyone in this room, and literally this room, is that we might be here more. So that the current bylaws now, under Item 4, call for 7 regularly scheduled meetings per semester, which equals the same number of meetings that currently exist, but they don't make a distinction between business and discussion meetings. Instead, it broadly says that the executive board shall establish both business and discussion items. And in effect, this would mean that this format we have here would become the new format, quite possibly, for all GPSA meetings, that we could have all the GPSA meetings here, that the goal would be to continue to fill out the body, fill in the seats, and perhaps we could best do that, we argue, by having 7 meetings with everyone, as opposed to 4 meetings with everyone, and then 3 smaller meetings to discuss just the business of the body. And I think that's a pretty significant change. There's some clear benefits, I've outlined them, but there might be some risks in that perhaps a smaller group can more effectively transact business. So what we're still talking about, well, what we want input is how should we structure the 90 minutes that we have each meeting, now that we'll have seven of these 90-minute meetings, how can we best structure them so as to effectively engage all the people who would come to the meeting? And now this gives me a chance to bring up the second big topic, which is related to membership of the GPSA. And this falls under Article 4 of the Charter still. It remains Article 4, but there have been some changes made to it. Let me just say what hasn't changed. Broadly, what hasn't changed is the distinction between those members who vote and those who don't vote. But we've tried to clean up the language of the Charter and add some rights and responsibilities, particularly for all persons who might want to be involved in the GPSA. So we're trying to set like almost levels of membership within the GPSA. We argue that every graduate and professional student should have the right to become a member, but that members will mean one of two things. They'll mean either field representatives or they'll mean voting members. And we've maintained that language. More or less, it's the language we use today. The changes that have been made to the actual charter documents reflect some very smart minds, I must say, looking at this, some really good suggestions have come out of it. And so now we have a cleaner, more parliamentarily sound, and we think more effective language in there. But it does not change the size of the voting membership. It does not change the essential composition by graduate area or by professional school, and it does not change in any way the allocation or the number of field representatives who are coming to these meetings. So effectively, the discussion should be not so much about whether we should change those aspects, because, as I said, the committee has met, done its work, and made its suggestions, but rather how to maintain those particularities of membership within the new meeting format. In other words, knowing that we still want to have voting members who will vote on particular business items, and knowing that we want to have field representatives who will not vote on business items, how again to incorporate those various levels of membership within what we propose to be a new meeting format entirely. So if that's the second issue, I want to then raise a third issue, which is related to committees in both the charter and the bylaws. In what we think is a smart parliamentary move, we have eliminated certain enumeration within the charter of standing committees and moved them to bylaws. So if you were to read Article 6, it's been much reduced. We no longer outline every standing committee there, but use echoing the language of our peers in the Student Assembly and in the University Assembly, a much more open-ended language that enumerates those committees which are essential and we shall hope never eliminated from our charter because they have a charter-mandated role, and those committees which are not in the charter but of course are important and remain standing committees. That procedural move aside, what this does is it allows for much more flexibility in how standing committees are described, listed, and how their responsibilities can change. We feel this is appropriate because each year the bylaws are reviewed and voted on to open the business of the GPSA, and so it would be our hope that every year the committees would review their operations and suggest changes based on past practices. Within, though, the committees that now have moved from charters to bylaws, we now have, actually, I think, a very exciting opportunity to try out a number of new things. Since we're only working, quote-unquote, with the bylaws, we're able to do things that, if they don't work right away, they can actually be modified or changed fairly easily. In other words, we're taking away the need to go through the onerous charter review process each time and making it a little bit more easily changed through bylaws. And that, I think, is the way to view this move, as opposed to making it more easily possible to remove committees, which is, I think, the perverse way of doing it. So in the Article 4, Item 3 of the bylaws, we now have suggested a number of focus groups. And this is what I want to be your third item of discussion for your breakout group. There's been a lot of, let's call it ferment, a lot of good activity surrounding our ad hocs and surrounding other levels of activity within the GPSA. And those can, I think, at this point, be identified by three groups that have, or three issues, you might say, that have emerged as salient to discussion. And if you've been involved long enough, you know we've talked about some of them already. One, I think, would be the question of diversity within the GPSA and its membership. Two would be the question of mental health for graduate students. And three, the question of sustainability for the GPSA. And from my point of view, we have made an effort to try to bring these three items into some sort of bylaw language. So in the case of the diversity and mental health issues, we've suggested focus groups, which is, I admit, fairly ambiguously defined kind of word. We're not calling it a subcommittee for particular reasons. We're calling it something that is a focus group because it would include necessarily people outside of the GPSA in the conversation. Now, this we think is important in both the instances related to mental health and diversity, because we find that without reaching out to those professionals, for example, within mental health, like Tim Marshall, or those groups that deal with issues of diversity, in the case of the diversity focus group, we're not going to effectively promote the ends of those groups. But in the third case, with sustainability, we felt this felt more in line with the internal operations of the GPSA, and so now the bylaws would call for the operations and staffing committee, which is chaired by the Vice President for Operations, to address the question of sustainability within the GPSA and within the activities of this body. We were particular, however, to note that we did not want at this point to establish a group that would serve as a forum with other constituents or other bodies in the university. So I think that's the third point I want to discuss. So again, number one, as we break out later, would be the question of meeting format and how we shall meet and transact business. Number two, relatedly, the question of membership and who are members of the GPSA, what that implies, and so forth. And then finally, this whole issue of the focus groups and of how the committees have been structured. If we could have a discussion around those three issues, and if you could specifically make sure that your voting members write down your comments, that would then be useful to our discussion that we're going to have, if you go back to the last slide, on next week, which is March 14th, the business meeting, where the resolution will be presented and possibly voted on by the members, the voting members who have, in current charter stands, the right to vote only. Before I take questions and before I hand back to Kristen, I just wanted to offer one or two more or additional comments about this charter and bylaws, which I also offered at the last meeting. The first is, if my presentation hasn't already made clear, the charter committee group was an active and very thoughtful group of people whom I'd like to thank publicly here. And for all those people who raised their hands, again, please do thank them for the number of hours they put in to this process. It has been a process of compromise and discussion, and it's been very harmonious from my standpoint and reflects, again, the consensus nature that this body has prided itself on and not the contentious nature which other bodies in university often find themselves in. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is that we have not substantially altered the charter or bylaws, in that what we think we've done has not radically altered. We think we've improved the way it's been written. We think we've offered possible solutions and been creative, but we do not, none of us feel as if we've radically altered the process or the document. But I think that's important for all of you to remember. The discussion is about improvement, about greater efficiencies and synergies, and not about substantially divisive or radical issues. Is that time for questions?
He has about 1 or 2 minutes for questions, so about 3 or 3 questions or comments if you have them. Yes, Marquis?
I would ask, involving the member of the mission seats, and also outlining what the really consider that as well. Evaluating that, essentially, with a lot, 3 more additional seats.
Yeah, and if I may clarify, since we know, we've been in dialogue, this is not new to me, and I should say I'm happy to take amendments, though they may need to be moderated by the discussion we have on the 14th, given we may only have an hour to discuss it. Yeah, I think the question is, should we have an option or a way to expand the voting membership more easily under certain circumstances? It was not improved in the final resolution, so it's not in here. I didn't talk about it. But an amendment to that end would essentially allow the voting body to expand by, we discussed, 3 members, and there would be certain rules associated with it. I have language, as Marquise knows, already written to that effect, but it's not included in the current document. So it could be represented as an amendment, and if people would like to add to that, that would be fine.
And Ben with the last question.
I was just wondering if you could share how you would like the amendment process to proceed. As you know, I sent you a couple pages of points. Some of them may be friendly amendments. Some of them might be discussion. Are you circulating those points? How would friendly go forward? How would you like me to move forward?
Okay, so I have, for all those who are voting members, they know that I've solicited actively changes that could be made to improve the document. About 4 of you responded, which is wonderful, and I have, for the most part, incorporated everything that you suggested. So from my point of view, most of it has been friendly. I've written back to you in almost all cases with what I have changed and what I have not changed. If I haven't changed it, I don't consider it friendly. So if you want to still have a change, you have to run it through during the meeting process on the 14th.
Can you write back to me because I didn't get it?
if I haven't, but I do. I know what you wrote. And other people
write back to me. What do you want to change your comment?
I mean, they're under consideration, but you have to read the final document to see if they made it or not.
Will I do that before March?
Yeah, the resolution is circulated 24 hours in advance by the bylaws or the charter, whatever it is. You'll get it at least 24 hours in advance. But
I'm just trying to have a conversation with you, Tom. Why are you being so particular?
Well, the problem is this is a 6-month process, so I'm trying to limit the changes at the end to those that I think are basically grammatical.
You
excluded
me from the 6-month process.
No, I haven't.
You're not responding to my email. I don't know what to do.
If I haven't, it was clearly an omission on my part. I'm sure I looked at your document.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
And with that, that'll be the last question or comment. And now we're actually going to move into the breakout sessions. And so the breakout sessions will operate in a way where we're going to break out to the what was identified areas, or colloquially called superfields. And so those are identified by the grad school, and those are the physical sciences, biological sciences, social sciences, humanities, and the professional schools. And so if you'll congregate in different areas of the room and find your voting representatives. And so on the table to discuss today are the different changes that are proposed to the charter. And so the 3 areas that Tom specifically identified for feedback were the meeting structure, the membership and focus groups. And additionally, I'll come around with the handout that Bobby had mentioned in order to identify the field areas within your superfield to try to start noting what should be getting funding, like what organization actually is representing the field. And so that's a pamphlet to look through. Then also to discuss any feedback that should be going to President Skorton at this time. What he presented at the last discussion meeting, he said that often he does not hear input from graduate students enough. And so if you have any ideas for feedback, you can email him directly or bring it up in this forum. And then finally, also just to start beginning the discussion of the emergency grad school funding, and if anybody here has applied for emergency loans or have known about emergency funding through different departments, to raise those issues. And so again, find your superfield and begin discussing. And we'll convene within, see what time is it now? 6:41, we'll convene at 6:55 in order to kind of get a sense of what the different groups were discussing. All right, please break up.
Social sciences.
Here is the...
from what you were discussing. So we mainly talked about community structure, because that's what we really have time to discuss. Generally, most physical science still representatives, we would love to discuss with voting members and the new representatives. Breakout sessions we do are probably the most productive things that we do in our session meetings. It's a great opportunity to interact with your other fellow student leaders and hear a lot of good advice or opinions to come out of these breakout sessions. And we have quite a number of meetings where we invite everyone, we would love accommodate everyone for this discussion meeting, that will effectively double the tension of the breakout sessions that we have. And we think that's unquestionably a good thing. And then we have time. So.
And humanity. We spent most of our time trying to get information on the various fields. I think we filled out some things on our sheet. Not surprising, perhaps, as I mentioned, Bobby, the fields who aren't represented were here. So, but believe me, Tom and I, this is something that we have personally worked on and taken on personal charge to get more representation in the humanities to try and find out. I pledge here and now, this is the start of my re-election campaign. I will get the SAO. Vote for him. very quickly, my last name isn't a verb, so I can't make a YouTube video.
Oh,
then we very quickly talk about the charter changes, highlighting particularly the meeting format change, probably the thing most relevant and interesting to field representation.
Biological sciences. All right, seeing that there is 1 minute left, the chair would entertain a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
So moved.
Well, moved by Ben. Is there a second? Second by Kyle. All those opposed, please raise your packets. Seeing none, the motion carries, so we will now go to 7:05. All right, the next one would be social sciences.
We talked somewhere about the statistics and the utility of having emerging discussion voting meetings, and also about membership and what different rights responsibilities are and why it's important to bring them to the charter. And then we also passed around Nicole's field thing. At that time, communication. Adam, I need my grammar. And we share similar, not concerns, but questions about attendance and that kind of thing. Just to clarify, there is an attendance policy that currently gets their voting numbers, given that they have official responsibilities. We don't have incumbent field reps, although they would very strongly encourage to attend as many meetings as they could.
The professional schools?
So we discussed a bullet point in our outline. We feel that the opportunity to have additional meetings on how to make other speakers really impacts the voting numbers, which all of the special schools are. So we would also encourage people to think about the possibility of limiting the number of meetings so that reps might be encouraged to attend. We also talked about the voting membership and the open to considering expansion or the caution and encourage that we follow on a representative basis of the schools and populations versus opening up to possibly at marches or concerns that that can dominate by who have shared particular interests or representatives.
And I believe we hit on every breakout group, and so these will obviously be posted later. They're also in the meeting minutes, and this is an ongoing discussion. Please, if you have any offline comments, feel free to email voting representatives or any of the executive membership. It would be grateful to actually continue this discussion into the future. The next meeting is actually a week from today at the Big Red Barn, and that's going to be kind of a long and tedious and complex meeting because we're actually going to be considering the charter. And so there will be an email going out later this evening or tomorrow morning that discusses what the amendment process will be for that. If you have any ideas to expand on and approve the current charter documents and also the associated bylaws. And then also it will outlay how the format of the meeting is actually going to go. So if you have any questions or comments on that, please approach me afterwards and I'll be happy to discuss it with you. And with that, are there any questions or comments at this time? Yes, Evan.
Actually, first,
yes,
I'd like to publicly apologize to Tom. Apparently, he did not receive my email, and so there was a miscommunication there. We will work it out, and I'm sorry, Tom.
I just re-forwarded the email. I did receive it. Because it wasn't sent to Tom's email address anyway. Technical staff.
Well, right. It was sent to BC operations, well, which is, yeah, so.
The email is missing.
And with that, all right, there's a motion on the table to adjourn. Is there a second? All those opposed, please raise your placard.
Can we kind of open forum for a second? Let's not.
We have one more.
Okay,
yeah, we're adjourned. If you'd like to shout it out now, you can.
The situation is that two more free times are right on the table.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.